good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Moraz. Today we're joined by Round County Superintendent Marvin Moore. And Marvin, it's always great to have you on the program.
Chuck, thank you and MKY and Morehead State University for inviting me up. I always look forward to coming up here and having a good discussion with you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about enrollment. I know you and I had a chance to talk about that here recently, and you're up to 3,385 students, up 40 from last year. Obviously, that's a positive sign.
That's a good thing for us. Anytime we show growth and we get extra dollars for the growth, and also our ADA's been up, and we've really emphasized that we want our students in attendance. Of course, you have to have them there to be able to teach them, but also that's dollars for us as well because we are our ADA, average daily attendance. That's revenue for the district, and we really emphasize that it's important because of the tight budget that we have good attendance on a daily basis.
You mentioned that, and I think you told me that the goal for your average daily attendance is 95%, but you've so far exceeded that.
Well, that's our goal, 95% a day. Last month, first month of school, we were right at 96%, which is good news for us, but we'd like to even do better than that. But, of course, you know, once you start bringing kids in with the bugs, a lot of kids get sick, and then also this time of year with the allergies and then the flu bug started. So we deal with that, but we have nurses in all our buildings, and they monitor that on a daily basis, and that's a big help to us as well.
You and I have talked about this, and some other folks out there who are not familiar with the topic may not realize that the state basically funds the school district for your ADA, your average daily attendance. Each kid there is worth so many dollars per day to you in state funding, right?
Yeah, we get $3,922 this year per child. And if a student is absent, they subtract from that. So it averages it out a little over about $34 a day per student in attendance. And again, that's important because that's why we're funded. Most of our revenue comes from the SEEK allocation, and SEEK is through student attendance. And we've been very fortunate the last few years. Our ADA has been up, student growth has been up, and that's a good thing.
One thing I wonder about is that the state went ahead and passed a new law changing the dropout age from 16 to 18. And at first blush, you say, well, that means there'll be more kids in school. The district gets more funding, but there's more to it than that, right?
Yes. You know, a lot of those students that, of course, we're very supportive of moving the dropout age to 18. We all want all of our students to be successful, and we want them to graduate, and we want them to get college and career ready. But some of those students, once they get 18 and they've just got three or four credits, it's a challenge for the school and for the student to be able to get them through school. That's why we have developed an alternative school, and we've got that located at the old middle school. We have 16 high school students over there and I think 11 middle school students, trying to give those students an opportunity to catch up, give them a second chance to be successful. And we have three certified teachers there and one instructional aide there. And they do a good job making sure those students get an opportunity to be successful.
The one thing I wonder about, and I was pondering this one day, when you talk about these kids who would have dropped out at 16 had they had the opportunity but are now sticking around for at least a couple of more years possibly, the fact is if they don't want to be there, how difficult can that situation be? Because if they don't want to be there, they might cause disruptions in the classroom or perhaps just kind of sit there and not learn anyway, and then they leave at 18 as it is and still don't get their degree.
And that's a very good point, Chuck, and that's some of the discussion we have with the high school administration and the middle school administration as well to put a plan in place for those students and that we locate them outside the normal high school setting or the middle school setting and relocate them at another site so they won't be disruptive, and because it's not fair to the other students that want to be there and want to be successful, and it's not fair to the staff to deal with students that don't want to be there. So, and we emphasize, and we have a lot of counseling for those students, that this is an opportunity for you to get a high school diploma and get you college and career ready, so take advantage of that. And it's not an easy job. It's a tough job for those staff to do that, But for most part, they do a pretty good job. Last year at the high school, we only had two high school seniors that didn't graduate from when they started as a freshman, and that's wonderful. And we work very hard, and the high school works very hard to try to get all those students through high school so they'll be successful and have an opportunity to be college and career ready.
Well, you talk about that, and that means probably more counseling, to sit down with these young people who may be in jeopardy of not completing their educations and talking to them about how important it is, and it may take more than one discussion, as you know.
Absolutely, because we're lucky, too. We have two wonderful counselors at the high school. They do a great job, and also they work with Pathways and through the human resource, through social services. We have that resource, too, as well as Pathways. And we utilize the resources that they have to work with some of these students, that because a lot of these students, they bring a lot of baggage every day to the school with them, and it does take a lot of counseling because, again, these students, we want to try to get them and to be ready for life as well as the students that are being successful, and we feel like we owe it to those students to give them an opportunity.
People probably already know the story by now about the fact that the district and every other school district in Kentucky has taken millions of dollars in cuts, federal and state funding here in the last few years, and you have to continue cutting the budget. And the one thing we've talked about at the same time, while you're looking at programs and way to trim things here and there, trying to find new textbooks at a reasonable price, also facility upgrades. I mean, there are a lot of challenges every school district, including yours, faces in this state.
Absolutely. Of course, every year we deal with a tight budget. Last year we had to make some tough decisions. We cut $300,000 out of the budget to make it work. We're doing everything we can to try to keep hands in the classroom. And some of the decisions we had to make because of those cuts, you know, not only that, you know, we got a $425,000 cut through SEEK. You know, when the state short of revenue, they just come up and cut your SEEK allocation at any time. The things that we're dealing with, too, teacher retirement match. 4 years ago, we didn't have to match that. This year, we budgeted $560,000 just to match teacher retirement. Next year, we already know we're going to have to budget $720,000 just to match teacher retirement. And you keep in mind, 4 years ago, we didn't have to do that. And then this Kismet assessment, we've been assessed $563,000, and we budgeted over a 6-year period to pay that assessment. So those things we're hit with, the increase this year to me of the 1%, it's way past due, and to me it's a smack in the face to say we're going to give you 1%, then they raise their teacher retirement 0.7%, so teachers really only got a .25, I think, like that. That cost us $100,000. Then next year, the 2% mandate, we're anticipating to get about $120,000 through SEEK for that mandate to take care of the 2%, and the 2% was going to cost us over $200,000. So those are the things that we wrestle with every year to try to make this to make this budget work. And we're going to make it work because, as facetiously I say to the principals, we're not going to lock the doors. We got to make it work. But sometimes, from my standpoint, it gets frustrating because I know that's dollars that we're taking out of the classroom that we could be putting there for kids, and that's where I get frustrated.
On another point, you and I also spoke recently about the proposed recreation park out at Sunnybrook, the old golf course that MSU used to own. And originally when this started, Morehead State, along with the school district, the county and the city, Rowan County and the city of Morehead, were partnering on this initiative, and this has been going now several years. And I was going to ask you this question. In terms of the school district, what's the level of support for this project?
Well, we're 100% behind this project because we see the need for additional recreation facilities in this community. You know, now the city, they don't have a pool. And we've got a big demand on the athletic fields we have at the community park, the soccer complex, and then also the old middle school gymnasium. And there's a big need in this community for additional fields and recreation for our students. And we're supporting that that endeavor 100%, because you know, Dr. Andrews, and I commend him and Morehead State University and Board of Regents wanting to keep that piece of property, the old Sunnybrook property, because it's prime property. And to give the county and the city and the school district, we all need to be working together to try to make that happen, because that's going to be facilities that we can, our students and the community can utilize for recreational activities, and I think that's a big need in this community.
And you're willing to put your money where your mouth is when we talk about the school district. I mean, the community park land is actually owned by the school district, and you said to me that you're willing to help out with this project in a cash way because of that property and what could be done out at Sunnybrook.
Of course, when we bought the community park property years ago, it's in the agreement that we provide facilities and athletic fields for the community. And if we were ever to sell that, we still have to have a number of softball fields, baseball fields, soccer complex, and various fields. So if that were ever to sell, we would take what we paid for that field years ago, like I think it was a little over $350,000, and we would, and I've talked to the board, they're willing to let that go towards the Sunnybrook project. So, yes, we're committed financially, and we're committed to do whatever we need to do to make that happen, because I just think it's a great opportunity for this community.
Well, Marvin, we're about out of time. As always, it's great to have you on Front Page, and certainly best of luck to all you folks over in the Rowland School District. We think you do a great job, and we appreciate the work you do.
Chuck, always enjoy coming up and chatting with you.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Rowland County Schools Superintendent Marvin Moore. I'm Chuck Meraz. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
There are many ways to connect with Morehead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Morehead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Welcome back to today's Front Page. I'm Chuck Meraz. We're now joined by Marion Gwynn, Chief Executive Officer of God's Pantry Food Bank over in Lexington, serving 50 counties in both central and eastern Kentucky. And Marion, thanks for joining us today on the show.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Well, you were here about 4 years ago when we did something similar, and you've got your latest study out in regards to hunger in central and eastern Kentucky, the 2014 report. Tell us a little bit about it.
We do. Every 4 years, we support Feeding America's effort to do the largest study of hunger that's conducted in the United States. This go-around, they worked with Westat and the Urban Institute. And last summer, we were a part of the data collection process to make sure that the stories of the folks that we're serving in central and eastern Kentucky were included in this important national study.
Well, as you look back to the 2010 report and compare it to the latest report, how have things in your mind changed?
It's interesting. 2010 was kind of in the height of the recession, and one would hope that we'd seen things improve incredibly, or that we were seeing dramatically fewer people needing food assistance, but that isn't true. In Hunger in Central and Eastern Kentucky 2014, we know that we are feeding 190,000 unique individuals each year, actually more than that. So, and at the same time, we know that there's about 252,000 people in our service area who are deemed to be food insecure or need food assistance of some sort at some point throughout the year. So we see ourselves as, I guess it's exciting or gratifying to know that we're reaching 3/4 of the food insecure population. And yet that means that there's another, 58,000 people who we're not reaching. And so we're continuing to work hard to bridge these gaps and make sure that anyone in our service area who's in need of emergency or routine food assistance has access to enough nutritious food to fuel their bodies.
When you talk about these 190,000, Marion, are they many of the same people that you were serving in 2010?
We don't really have a way to know that. But what we do know about the the people that we're serving. Our average client is a white female, late 30s, early 40s, who is a part of a household that includes two or three people. Typically, there is an adult in the household who is working. Unfortunately, oftentimes that work is part-time, or they don't have full-time work across a full year. A very significant percentage of the households that we serve, 77%, fall at or below 100% of the poverty level. And 60% of households earn less than $10,000 per year. So with earnings at this level, it's not difficult to imagine that there are times when these households need to ask for assistance. We also learned a lot about the coping mechanisms of individuals who are in need of food assistance or who are food insecure. And this is information that we haven't ever had before. So one of the things that isn't necessarily surprising, but the percentage of people who indicated this coping mechanism was tremendous. 90% of our clients indicated that they buy the cheapest food available regardless of its health implication.
And that has to be alarming in many ways.
It is. But, you know, if I think about it, if I had $10 to feed my family for the rest of this week, would I buy chicken breasts and mixed field greens? Or would I purchase beans and pasta and, you know, maybe bologna or something else? I would be
noodles.
Looking
yeah, things like that, right?
At what would fill my family the best over the course of the next few days versus what might be best for my family. And, you know, that's got to be tough. 65% indicated that they buy food in dented or damaged packages. 63% eat expired food. You know, then there are some positive things. 45% indicated that they grow food in a garden. But 34% indicated that they routinely water down food or drinks to make them last longer. And, you know, I may choose to water down my sports drink because I don't like it full dosed. But it's a whole different thing if you're talking about watering down your children's milk or your baby's formula. You know, that's a different sort of ramification. So the individuals that we're working with routinely have to make very difficult choices. They talk about making choices between paying for food or paying for utilities.
A tough choice to have to make.
Absolutely, particularly when you're in the heat of the summer or as we move into, you know, the really severe portions of winter here in a few months. 34% indicated that they're making that choice every single month. Another large percentage indicated that they, you know, routinely make choices between paying for food and paying for transportation, paying for food or paying for medicine or medical care. These are tough choices. And in talking with folks, we know that when faced with these choices, food is often the loser. You don't want your utilities shut down. If you are working, you've got to keep your car running so you can get to work. And you think, okay, I can get by. I can skip another meal. I can water down my food. I can come up with some other, I can make it till tomorrow if I don't eat. And that's just sad in a number of ways. In thinking about seniors and medicine or medical care, you know, having a good diet in addition to the appropriate medications is really important to maintaining a healthy life. We learned this go around that 21% of the households that we serve are grandparents who are raising grandchildren.
What does that say to you?
Well, I just think, you know, I've known for years that children and senior citizens are disproportionately impacted by hunger. And so when you think about members of these two very fragile populations living together, when you think of seniors who are caring for grandchildren, keeping up with these, you know, what may be really active kids, nurturing them, caring for their physical and emotional needs, trying to spread what may be very minimal resources across more people and really active people, it's got to just be almost impossible.
An interesting stat that I'm looking at right now as part of your study, it says 44% of your clients have less than a high school education, and people talk often, especially I work on a university campus, obviously, talk about the correlation between being able to live a decent lifestyle with a college education as opposed to a high school education, and now you're talking about folks who did not even complete their high school degree programs.
Yes, and when you think about that, then, you know, these very meager earnings are not surprising.
Well, and that's what, about almost 80,000 people probably? Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. I know when I got into this work now more than 17 years ago, I think my bias was that folks who weren't completing high school were my grandparents' ages or older, but that's just not true. It continues to be a problem, and, you know, when folks don't have the basis of even a high school diploma, it's really difficult for them to find work that enables them to sustain themselves.
You mentioned 190,000 people who needed assistance from God's Pantry Food Bank back in 2010. The number's about the same as we are rolling through 2014. And first of all, I would think for you it has to be kind of frustrating. And at the same time, I'm kind of wondering why perhaps we haven't made progress and cut into that number more.
Well, I would say two things. One, we've grown in distribution dramatically in that time period. And so I feel great that we're actually providing people with more food and with a healthier mix of food as I think about the way God's Pantry Food Bank has changed over the past 4 years. Kentucky has 12 of the poorest counties in the United States in the 50 counties that we serve. You know, we have economic and a variety of other problems that have led to low incomes and difficulties with folks maintaining employment. You know, most recently we've got this whole mining issue and the loss of mining jobs that had sustained many, many Kentucky families. So would these 190,000 people be exactly the same as the ones 4 years ago? Probably not. But it just continues to be this problem that weaves in and out of every community that we serve. And our goal is, you know, again, that we are providing folks with the food that they need to sustain their lives and so that children who are in school are well-nourished so that they can learn and perhaps, you know, create different lives than the ones that they're currently leading.
Marion, what's the biggest challenge your agency faces in trying to serve all these people? I'm sure there are people out there that don't know about you yet, and you probably could serve even.
Well, there's two things. One, I mean, really, let's face it, it's always about resources at some level. So having enough food, sourcing new sources of food that are of high quality and nutritious is always a challenge for us. You know, having the financial resources to continue to grow and penetrate this problem in even more meaningful ways is significant. But it also has to do with being able to connect with groups in the community who are interested in this work and want to do something in their hometown to make a difference. You know, we're hoping to begin very soon on the construction of a regional distribution center here in Moorhead. And from our experiences with regional distribution centers in London and Prestonsburg, I know that that's going to dramatically change this region and the way food pantries and soup kitchens that are operating in here in this area think and enhance their ability to grow and reach out to more and more people. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. God's Pantry Food Bank, our staff and our board are working and focused routinely on how we reach more people with better food to really nourish our citizens and allow everybody to live their best possible life.
Well, and we're just about out of time. If someone needs assistance from the God's Pantry Food Bank or knows someone who does, how can they get in touch with you?
I would encourage you to visit our website, godspantryfoodbank.org. You'll be able to find a listing of member agencies by county. You also will be able to email us from there. But that's probably the simplest way to reach us.
Marion, thanks so much for spending time with us today on Front Page.
Thank you.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Marion Gwynn, Chief Executive Officer for God's Pantry Food Bank, located in Lexington and serving 50 counties in central and eastern Kentucky. I'm Chuck Morales, host of Front Page. See you next time.